you know that it's going to be alright. I think it's gonna be alright. Everything will always be alright when we go shopping. Well, you know that it's going
Hello, to shoppers, be and welcome to the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show. My name is Johnny Wright. Welcome, welcome, welcome. The chilly Saturday morning, just past 8 o'clock. You've tuned in. Thank you for doing so. Coming up on the radio program this morning, something to warm the cockles of your heart. We've got a lot of interviews today with great people. I know you're going to enjoy conversations with John Ronca. He's the principal at Ballard High School in Huxley, Iowa. This is where I went to school. It's my alma mater. Class of 83. Yeah, they're still cleaning up, I think, after that particular year. And he's going to talk a lot about the power that teachers have in our lives. And teachers are one of my favorite people in the world. And the commitment that it takes, you can't pay them enough, as far as I'm concerned, in my world. And just John and I are going to speak to that. We're also going to touch a little bit about the power of handwritten notes, which was a blog post that I wrote earlier in the week on Monday. And we're going to, many of the interviews you'll hear today, sort of touch directly and indirectly off of that. Also coming up on the radio program, Lori Bales. She's a customer service representative for Bank of the West in the Clive branch off 73rd Street, Windsor Heights. And that now it's Clive. Okay, so it's on the other side of the interstate. That's Clive, all right? If you're familiar with that area, you go one way to that triangular, that cool triangular place. Yeah, that store that's north of there, I think that's Windsor Heights. And so the dividing line, although the YMCA, Walnut Creek Y, I don't think that has a Clive. I don't know. The lines, if you could actually look at where everything is divided, maybe it gets a little crazy in there. Maybe that's the Four Corners. I'm not going to call that the Four Corners, just because it kind of sounds cool. Any event, Lori will join us on the program later on to talk about, again, the power of a handwritten note. She wrote me a wonderful note, unsolicited, didn't know it was coming, and I was touched by it, and so that sort of was one of the impetus for the blog post about handwritten notes. Also, Kirby Stolen, who works at Come & Go, again down on 73rd Street, no slouch in her own right in the customer service department. She was Smile Project winner number 10. The Smile Project is something I started back in, I believe it was March 2010, to reward those people working on the front lines as employees in the customer service field and retail who smiled at me when I came up to them, when I engaged by them. And you'd say, well, Johnny, haven't you been giving away a lot of those awards? And in 2010, no. 10 people, 10 times, 10 is all, where I would come up to a counter or a checkout area and an employee would smile at me. It's a big deal. Now, it's been happening with more frequency, and I'm so glad to see that. But Kirby went above and beyond the smile, and you'll hear my interview with her. Actually, we did it. We recorded in real time at the Come & Go while she was sort of she was running around trying to ring things up, and this bozo with this recorder in his hand was getting her input. And also coming up on the radio program, Greg Grove, who is an incredibly powerful teacher. He is a man of faith. He's a former Iowa State athlete. And I just think one of the most dynamic people I've ever known, and had a tremendous impact on me as I was growing up in my high school years. He was my choir director at Ballard High School. He's went on to work at Iowa City High now, where he is the choir director there. And a lot of tremendously talented people there. And he has been a part of the reason to bring that talent, of course, out of those young people. Your weather forecast, well, it could use some sprucing up. We got cloudy, cold, windy. Now, a high of 19, that's what the thermometer will say. But, yeah, you run out there and wear nothing but, your Felix the Cat slippers, you're going to sense that there's a bit of a wind chill going on. Gusts as high as 25 miles an hour, so says John McLaughlin to us tonight. This is an interesting. Why do they call it windy? Typically, they use the term windy in the summertime, but they use the term blustery in the winter. Windy in summer, bluster. I guess just it feels colder, you know, that blustery feel. Well, no matter how you slice it, it's just going to be wind going to be blowing around, still up 25-mile-an-hour gusts, low of 5 degrees. Wind chill will feel like that and even colder. Then Sunday, we get a chance of snow, actually in the overnight into Sunday, which they say should end around noontime. But then Monday, Martin Luther King Day, when many of you will be home on vacation, of course, government holiday for some, chance of snow and or sleet, and a high of 29. So it gets a little warmer, but with that, of course, unfortunately, comes the opportunity for some, as warm air flows, so does that creates this whole sort of weather phenomenon that we call just snow. My first guest this morning was part of a blog post that I wrote on Monday called The Power of a Handwritten Note. And his note to me, and he wrote several of them when I was going to high school at Ballard High School in Huxley. He wrote several of them to me. This one in particular was so unbelievably powerful, and I've kept many of them. And so you can see that note and many others and sort of the whole idea of it at www.theunsecretshopper.com. He is a man who has mentored many, many young people like myself. He is a man of faith. He was a tremendous athlete at Iowa State. He joins us this morning. His name is Greg Grove. Good morning, Mr. Grove.
Good morning, John.
Mr. Grove, do you find it one of the things that as a teacher, student-teacher relationship, no matter how old your students get, do they always call you Mr. Grove?
Oddly enough, they do.
Does that seem strange?
You know what? I still call my teachers Mr. whoever they are, and most of them are in the grave now. That's how old I am. But that just seems to be, you know, there seems to be that sort of that sense of respect and position, I think, that it just seems natural to say. A lot of my students use Dr. Grove now simply because, but I always sign my things Mr. Grove, and I certainly never insist that they use that term.
Well, Mr. Grove, I suddenly realized I've known you since the early 80s, and yet there's so much that I really don't know about you. Where are you from? Did you grow up in an education background, athletic background?
Well, both. I grew up in both Vinton, Iowa for about 13 years, and then I moved to Tipton, Iowa, and spent 7th through 12th grade in Tipton, graduated from Tipton High School, and I was both an athlete and I certainly wouldn't say scholar, but I took my studies seriously, and, you know, I was an average to above-average student. My mother was a music teacher as well, although not active during my high school years. My father had a couple years of college, so, we valued education, certainly, but I wouldn't say we grew up in an education environment necessarily. But we certainly always took it seriously and studied hard and tried to, reach our potential.
Was there a moment? Now, you went on to some level of stardom at Iowa State. You played with Dexter Green, correct?
Well, that's correct. That's a very loose use of the term stardom. But I did earn a football scholarship to Iowa State. Started there in 1972. Was recruited by Johnny Majors. And then that year he moved on to Pittsburgh, and so I played 4 years with Earl Bruce. And one of my teammates certainly was Dexter Green, who was just a wonderful, wonderful kid and, of course, a very talented football player who was the all-time leading rusher at Iowa State until fairly recently. Maybe I think Troy Davis him out of there. But
And so did you block for Dexter? Were you like the fullback?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, I was both. I was one of those guys. We were a little thin, especially our senior year. We were a little thin, so I was both a blocking back and a running back. So I got quite a bit of time in both places, and just had a wonderful, wonderful experience there. It was something I wouldn't trade at all.
Is there an Earl? And you used to tell me a lot of Earl Bruce stories. Is there one in particular that you remember most, or that was influential? I know he was sort of a different kind of guy. Yes.
Well, yeah, he was a different guy. He had a brilliant football mind. He just had a bit of a quirky personality, and more than an incident, I think, were just some of his characteristics, some of his sayings. He was not particularly athletic himself. But he would always try to demonstrate things. We'd always get a chuckle out of him trying to demonstrate a drive block or a flag pattern, and it was pretty comical. He was the kind of guy that when you first meet him, you might kind of raise your eyebrows a little bit. But boy, when you played for him for several years, he was a great guy that really had your best interest at heart.
Did you stay in touch with Earl after you left college?
The only time I've really ever had any contact with him, I wrote to him and congratulated him when he was named head football coach at Ohio State, because I knew that was his professional dream from the time he was at Ohio State as a student assistant. But other than that, I really haven't. I did, however, just purchase a DVD of I think it's called something like the Earl Bruce Years, and there are some interviews with him and his Hall of Fame acceptance speech at Iowa State, and it has really brought back a lot of great memories.
Wow. Mr. Grove, what was there a moment, and now as a teacher for all these many years, and how long have you been a teacher?
Well, I think this is my 33rd year.
Wow.
I believe.
Is there the moment were you, as a person, said, all right, teaching is my profession. That's the road I'm going to go down. Was there a moment when that sort of came to you?
You know, that's funny. They would say, and I certainly don't want to bore you with a long story, but you know, there was, and I remember as I left high school, in fact, it was my high school track coach said, you know, I really think you'd be a good teacher. And I told him at the time, I said, well, Mr. Beckler, I want you to know that when I leave here after graduation, it's the last time I'll ever be in a high school. And it wasn't that I hated it or anything. I just had no inclination of doing something like that. And here I am 33 years later, still in high school. But, you know, I was really kind of floundering, looking for a major. I just couldn't settle on anything. And those words were just planted in my brain. So I thought, you know, I think I could enjoy being a history teacher and a coach. And then, oddly enough, about somewhere in my second year, I started singing in a barbershop quartet, and that's a whole another story how that transpired. But I just really kind of remembered how much I enjoyed my music experience in high school, and so just kind of on a whim, I joined one of the collegiate choirs there. And honestly, I was in choir for maybe 10 minutes, and I said, this is it.
Wow.
This is what I'm going to do. And I, you know, it's just, I just call it kind of a God thing. You know, he planted it right there, and sort of all my questioning and confusion cleared up. And I thought, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to be a choir director and coach. And I did that for several years.
Wow. Mr. Grove, you have a dynamic. And I remember when I was in choir, when I believe it was 81 at Ballard or 82, when I joined and I met you, you had a dynamic that was, I thought, very, very unusual in the sense of you. Here you were an athlete, a great athlete. You were also a wonderful instructor, and you were a man of faith. And you had all three of those things come together in a way that I, as a young man, had never seen, and frankly, through all my years, have rarely run into. How did you, we know the story of your athleticism, we know the story of how you came upon teaching. As a man of faith, when was that moment for you?
Well, that's probably a little more difficult to pinpoint. We did grow up in a home that went to church regularly, and my mother was a preacher's child, and she was a musician herself, and I tell my students I grew up standing by my mother in Methodist church, learning to sing the alto line, which is how I, you know, kind of learned how to sing harmony and some of those things. But it wasn't until I was in high school and heard some kids visited our high school youth group from campus. It was called Campus Crusade for Christ, and they were just some college kids who were there kind of on an informal basis, and they talked about the concept of developing a personal relationship with Christ. You know, at that point, I just kind of turned it all over to the Lord. You know, I can't say that there was a revolutionary house cleaning of my life at that point. I was one of those kind of do-gooder kids. Right. I was kind of a people pleaser, and I wasn't into things that I really shouldn't have been. But I did realize that, you know, just being a good kid in itself really, really wasn't enough. So, you know, I kind of followed through on that, but I can't say, like I said, in high school that made a huge, huge difference. But when I got to college, some football players were in a Bible study, so I joined up and started to study the Bible a little more intensely and more in depth, and that's where I think that I could really say life change began to take place in my life. And you know, that's kind of back to where I point as the beginning of my journey. And then one of our football coaches and a couple of the guys on the team, one of my good friend Maynard Stensrud and myself, we kind of started an FCA pro chapter at Iowa State and got a lot of football players involved in that. And my understanding is that the FCA is still going there, although I can't speak to the truth of that. But I've heard that the FCA, you know, continues to meet weekly or biweekly basis there.
The impact that you have had over those 30 plus years on young people and their parents, I cannot be overestimated, cannot be overstated. And I know in particular, and I wrote a blog post about this, the impact of, I have many notes from you, and one of the ones that I think is, it touched me the most is the one that I put up on the power that you have had. I akin it to dropping a pebble in the ocean versus dropping a boulder in a pond. And to me, you are the latter, and the impact you've certainly had on me, and I know so many other people. Are you aware of that?
Well, you know, occasionally a student will come back and say something, although I'm not sure quite as eloquently as you have described it. Occasionally a student, or actually it's more likely that a parent will maybe catch me after a final concert or something and just, you know, say thanks for all you've invested in my child. But, you know, I honestly don't think of it in those terms, I guess. I see, and of course I know I have hundreds of students every year. Sometimes up to as many as 300, and right now we have about 200 and I suppose about 230 students in our program, and it troubles me that I can't be more intimately acquainted with every child's story and know every child's deepest needs so that I can do what little I can to meet that. But every child that walks through the door, I'd see them as kind of a clean slate, and I try to get to know as many as I can, and it's not nearly enough to satisfy me. But when you begin to see kids' needs, and kids are needy, and there's a lot of reasons for that that would be subject of another show, but you know, we get more and more kids with troubled backgrounds and with coming from dysfunctional family situations, and certainly not all of them. I mean, that would be terribly inaccurate to characterize all kids as coming from that kind of background, but it would also be disingenuous not to say that the percentage of those kids is definitely increasing, and has, well, probably since I started teaching. I just see each child as having issues that hopefully I can assist them in meeting, or discoveries to be made, whether it's a musical talent or a gift in another area. You know, you just want to take them where they are and move them down the road.
How tough has it been? Or that's an assumption, because the separation of church and state, and your very strong faith. Has it ever become an issue? I mean, because I knew you were Christian. It wasn't like it was a secret, but yet it wasn't like you were, you know, wearing a cross on your shoulders and trying to teach choir class. You know, it was never like that. Has it ever been an issue?
I would say maybe two or three times have I gotten letters from parents, you know, really questioning things like my music selection. And let me be clear that I don't select all sacred music.
Yes.
But there's an enormous misconception out there of the separation of church and state and how that relates to school music programs. And every year I get students to say, oh, we can't sing religious music, can we? And, you know, students and I think many parents just don't really understand the law and how those court cases are, you know, regarding that have been settled over the years. But I know I don't stand up. I don't start every class with a prayer.
Right.
You know? No. And, but we would be cheating our students if we didn't talk about the text of the song. I mean, that's what makes a choir different from a band or an orchestra, is that we have text, and we talk about our text all the time, whether it's a secular poem or a sacred motet or a madrigal, you know, a silly madrigal or whatever. Right. We talk about the text because that drives how you deliver a song. And that's about as far as any religious discussion ever goes in class. It's just, you know, here's what this text means. Now, how did the composer set this, and how does the way he set it reflect what the text means? I often issue a disclaimer now. I'm not saying that anybody has to believe this text. I'm saying this is what the text is.
Wow.
You know, your belief is your business. But where I think the most impact comes, and why I'm so blessed to have been in this particular educational field, is because we get so much time with kids away from school and away from the school day that you are able to get into discussions. And oftentimes it's student-initiated discussions.
Right.
It's not, I don't walk up to a kid and say, hey, how's your spiritual life going? You know,
right.
It's a discussion that winds its way into that realm of their questioning or whatever.
So what I'm hearing is occasionally you'll throw in something from Beyonce. You'll throw a little something from...
We haven't done a lot of Beyonce
Britney
lately.
Spears, nothing. No, it doesn't go that way at Iowa City High. All right.
Yeah.
I understand. Well, so what's the last thing parents are listening, they listen to this show? Now, you're at, I said Iowa City High. That's where you teach, right?
That's correct. City High and Iowa City.
I took your shot, Mr. Grove, and I was hoping I was right. That would be very embarrassing if it was somewhere else.
No, you got it.
What's the one tip you give to parents? Because what I'm hearing is it's tougher now. It's tougher now than when you were teaching in the 80s and now. And it sounds like, I don't want to put words in your mouth. What's the thing you tell parents now that they're not doing enough of? They need to do more of? Is it more handwritten notes, more thank yous, more positive feedback, more religious foundation? You tell them.
Are you talking about in relation to teachers or in relation to their children?
Well, I'm talking about in relationship to their children, the children that you see a third of that child's life.
Number one, they do need to express their love to their children and not just assume that a student understands that they're loved. And they also need to be willing to say no to their child. And I think that might be one of the missing links. You would be stunned at the reaction we get from parents when we inform them of a certain situation. And we had one actually just last week. And some parents were notified of a situation, and there was just among some of the parents, just a sense of nonchalance about it. Well, there's the whole kids will be kids thing. I just think that's a giant cop out, and there's correct and acceptable and right behavior, and there's wrong and unacceptable and wrong behavior. And sometimes we let them pass off as a phase or kids will be kids or whatever, but kids need to know how to make decisions. They need to understand the consequence of their decisions. Sometimes it's minimal, sometimes it's enormous, they need to be willing to look at their child and say, no, we're not going to join another club, we're not going to join another sports team, we're not going to spend all this money on whatever,
sure.
Or yes, you will be in school tomorrow.
Amazing man, incredible mentor, and a great friend. That's Greg Grove, the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show, 1350 KRNT. Greg and his wife, Norma, of course, live in the Iowa City area. He teaches at Iowa City High, and retirement, he said he's really not ready yet, but he getting a little closer every year. Sure, well, we're all getting a little closer. It's just... It doesn't matter. I don't know. The way things are looking, Mr. Grove, you may be teaching another 20, 30 years before you can call it quits. So that's good news for all the students whose lives you touch. Coming up, we'll sort of shift directions a little bit. We're going to go, you're going to hear it real time as it was recorded. That's sort of an oxymoron. With Kirby Stolen, who is an employee at Come & Go. She was a small project winner number 10. And we're going to go, you're going to hear me trying to check in customers and do an interview with me. I think she does a fabulous job. You'll hear from her coming up next as the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show rolls on this Saturday morning on 1350 KRNT.
Are you looking for excellence in auto service? Hi, I'm Ron with Westside Auto Pros. Most of us have heard of AAA's Four Diamond Award. This coveted award is presented to the finest restaurants and hotels all across our country, a symbol of unsurpassed quality. But did you know that AAA also has an award for auto service facilities? It's called the Top Shop Award. And out of all the AAA-approved repair shops and dealerships in the Des Moines area, Westside Auto Pros is the only one to receive this award 7 years in a row. What does this mean to you? Excellent service for both you and your car. Honesty, integrity, and a job well done is at the heart of everything we do. Come experience the Westside Auto Pros difference. We are on 92nd Court just off of Swanson Boulevard in Clive. Call 225-9090. That's 225-9090. Or visit us online at Westside Auto Pros, where you can register to win free gas. Westside Auto Pros, proud to be a top shop.
Every day, more people are discovering Dahl's Pharmacy. Oh, it's been around since 1952, now in all 12 Dahl's Metro locations. Quietly doing things right. Prompt, courteous service, competitive prices, and real professionals who are happy to offer advice, discuss your Medicare options, or answer any questions you may have. Give your neighborhood Dahl's Pharmacy a try. You'll wish you'd done it sooner. And don't forget your flu shot. Walk-ins are welcome. Dahl's, expect more.
Forget your troubles, come on, get happy. You better chase all your cares away.
Welcome back to the Unsecret Shop Radio Show, 1350 KRNT. Help you forget about all your troubles. Leave them in your old kit bag and smile, smile, smile. You know, you don't hear songs, they don't write songs like this anymore. Although, you know, P. Diddy may have a little ditty that has something a little about put your troubles in your old kit bag. Sure, and smile. I'll have to look back into the archives for that. Your weather forecast this Saturday morning looks like cold, windy today and 19. So nice. Maybe stay home, wrap yourself up with a blankie, get around the fireplace. You got some shopping to do. That's all right, too. Just wear those extra bundles. That's all the weathermen tell us. If it's raining, they'll make sure they remind us to carry an umbrella, like we didn't know that. If it's cold, they'll remind us to wear pants, like we didn't, you know. But at least they're trying to help. I'm just trying to help. Tonight, windy. We'll drop down to 5 wind chill and air temperature about 14, but then snow on Sunday. And then a chance more for more snow on Sunday and Monday into Monday. And it looks like a high on Martin Luther King Day of 29. Right now, we are at, well, it says 10 degrees. I'm not sure I'm buying that, but that's at least what the thermometer on the old wall says. Coming up later in the program, you'll hear from John Ronka. He's the principal at Ballard High School. Also, Lori Bales, customer service representative from Bank of the West, to people who are very smart, very happy people, and you'll hear from them in conjunction with the blog post that I wrote called The Power of a Handwritten Note. And you can go to www.theunsecretshopper.com to read all about that. Someone else who had a prominent position in a blog post I wrote was Kirby Stolen. She's an employee at Come and Go on 73rd Street in Clive, Windsor Heights, that sort of that area right in there. Sure, right off 235, if you know that area. And she was fantastic. She's great. She smiles. She engages customers. Of course, I do customer service training, so I'm always looking for that kind of stuff. And I'm particularly looking for superstars. And I got to tell you what, if Come and Go is not careful, somebody's going to hire Kirby away from that location. Chris is the manager there, and I got a chance last week to go on site and interview Kirby and Chris in real time as they were trying to deal with customers who were wondering, why is this weird man holding this thing in front of their mouse and talking to them as if he's on the air? And this is why. I am with Kirby Stolen. She is at the Come and Go. Kirby, what's the address here?
1301 8th Street, West Des Moines.
1301 8th Street. We're here live on a Thursday, insanely crazy, busy Thursday morning. You're here. Now, what time do you come in?
7 a.m.
Oh, my gosh. Every morning?
Every morning.
Now, this young lady over here, I think you have a customer. Is Chris going to handle her? Chris, come on, man. Would you get a little snap? Let's go, brother. Get on top of it. How long have you been working at the Come and Go here?
Since July.
All right. And how did you find out about the opening, or how did you?
Tried online.
Comeandgo.com.
Yep.
All right. When you applied, was it a simple process, or did they ask you specific questions?
There's like a survey type thing you have to take.
Typical corporate stuff. You got to jump through a lot of hoops.
Oh, of course.
But you got in.
I did. I'm here.
And what was the training? And now you started at this store.
Mm-hmm. You do 40 hours of training.
And what does that training entail? Like, what sorts of? Chris, get over here. Come on, man. Get over here. Jump in. Chris is the manager here at the Come and Go. Now, is manager the term?
Yes. Yep, general manager for the Come and Go.
And
right
here. And how long have you been the manager here?
Since August 1st.
Oh, so you both there just sort of started at the same time.
Yeah, very new.
So the training, 40 hours of training before you actually did anything, is that correct?
Well, it's all here
So it's in real time. So are you paid while you train?
Absolutely.
All right, so you're taking care of her, Chris, is what I'm understanding.
Of course.
All right. The training entails what does she go through in a training sense?
It's all on-the-job training, basically doing things that you're going to be doing every day. So you just learn through the process that what you need to be doing when you're off training hours.
So opposed to some sort of classroom thing where it's not real time, they just kind of throw you into the fire.
Exactly.
How did that go for you at the beginning? Was it sort of, I suppose it had to be tough.
It's all right. It's not bad. It's all, you know, real life stuff, everything, every day.
And it's a process, right? Learning how to run a register, left brain, you just learning, and after a while, now you're old hat, right?
Yeah.
The part that you can't train someone about, and that's about being happy and smiling. Chris, did you recognize that in Kirby when she first came on board?
Absolutely. I saw that there was potential there to be an incredible customer service agent for Come and Go, and really pushed her hard to get better and better and better.
Is that true, or is he lying for his
seat? Him. Nope, credit
to him. He gets all
him.
The credit. All right. Well, you seem to be a naturally just happy person. Have you always been that way? Did you grow up that way?
No, this is me. I've always been.
Yeah? Brothers and sisters?
Four.
Oh, my gosh. And where are you in the pecking order?
Smack dab in the middle.
You're the middle kid. So you're the negotiator? You always want to make people happy?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, so that would, well, you're probably in the right sort of biz, in the retail sales,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, yep.
Now, do you want to make a career out of this? Because I'm looking at Chris, I'm thinking, you may not want to stick with him very much longer, really.
We'll see. It's fun. I'm enjoying it right now.
There seems to be a lot of opportunity to advance in the company. Is that accurate?
Yep, absolutely.
When you greet somebody, is there a process you go through? Do you think I have to smile, all of that?
It's all natural.
You just do it. Well, I want people to come in here more and more and more. Tell me the address again.
1301 8th Street, West Des Moines.
Okay, and Kirby, you are here what day so they can come in and find you specifically, look for that smile?
Sunday through Friday.
Wow. 7
to 3.
7 to get here at 6, forget it, she's not up yet. You get here after 3, forget it, she's gone.
I'm gone, yep.
Kirby Stolen, Smile Project winner. Let's give it up for Kirby. Let's hear it, you guys. That's what I'm talking about. Nice job.
Thank you.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Have a little fun at the Come and Go in the middle of the chaos. It's what we love to see. We love to see employees having a great time and, whumping it up and still, punching in our order, giving us our change, all that stuff. Kirby Stolen having she's infectious, I think is the right word, and Chris knows it. And in fact, Kirby, Chris tells me, just got promoted to a sales title. Kirby, just make sure there was extra Jack that went with that title, because a title without the money to back it up is no title at all. We're just working our way down 73rd Street, one customer, great customer service person to the next, as we move down to Bank of the West. And a woman there that I met and sent me a wonderful note that was profiled as with many notes that were sent to me over the years in The Power of a Handwritten Note, which is a blog post I wrote. You go to www.theunsecretshopper.com. Lori Bales joins us this morning. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning.
Hey, Lori, how did you get involved in the smiley, kissy face, engagement, happy, go take care of the customer world of being a customer service rep for Bank of the West? What's your journey? Were you a happy kid growing up? Were you an engaging kid? That's kind of a straw man of a question, but
I would say I was always pretty happy. I've actually been involved with customer service in one way or another for many years, and I just started with Bank of the West back in August, and I figured I'm good with people. I have lots of experience working with money, and I figured it'd be a good fit.
I like it. Good with people, good with money. Listen, you're going to run your own. Do you want to run your own company someday?
I do. It is a dream of mine.
Yeah, it seems I get that vibe. I mean, that really, and obviously what you just said, but there, you just seem to have that sort of engaging, endearing spirit. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have two older sisters, and I survived.
So they whomped on you growing up is what I'm hearing, and you still made it out alive.
That's right. Well, I don't care what they say. Sisters are worse than brothers.
That's so funny. What city did you grow up in? What town?
I grew up just north of Kansas City, Missouri, in a small town called Lawson.
Oh, sure. I absolutely understood. And how did you end up here in Des Moines?
I actually moved here last year. My boyfriend convinced me to move here, so...
Oh, my God. Listen, the next time someone convinces you to move north, you just lay down till the feeling passes, all right? Oh, my gosh. Of course, Kansas City gets its own share of snow and cold weather, as you know, Lori. And you got on with Bank of the West customer service rep. Now, that's the position you applied for, correct?
Yes, it is.
And what was the criteria for that position? What was Bank of the West looking for?
Definitely somebody who has a customer service background and also a strong passion for sales as well. You know, everybody's got to make their money.
yes. And so it was easy for you to connect the two. You're happy, you engage people, and you know that money will follow that.
Correct. Yep.
Well, Lori, I was just so impressed. You know, I had spoken to you, I guess, in the drive-thru a time or two. And, of course, you know, bank drive-thrus typically, unless you're right by the window, as a customer in the drive-thru, you're just sort of looking at the pod and talking to someone who do people normally look across and look at you, or do they look at the pod thing?
I think it depends on weather conditions or what time of day it is. I always try to look for the person. I feel like I'm talking to an electronical device unless I can actually see the person's face if I have the option of seeing them there. So,
Well, that's interesting because I always struggle with that. I feel like I should be talking at the little mic at the speaker where your voice is coming out of, but yet, duh, that's not you. You're over there by the window, and then there's always this. I never know where to look, so I'm not even sure I know what you look like, Laura. I'm not even sure I've actually looked at you, but all I know is you and I had some encounters or just some really joyful fun, and I can't even tell you what they were about, but the people in the drive-thru, not just you, Lori, but the other staff, they're always seen just very fun and engaging. And lo and behold, one day about, I don't know if it's been over a month now, I got a letter in the mail from Bank of the West. It was a card, and the card read this. It said, John, it was great to see you at Bank of the West and Clive on Tuesday. I just wanted to thank you once again for being such a joy. We know you have many options for your banking needs. We are happy you have chose us to bank with us. Thanks. Big old smiley face, signed Lori. And you know what? Here's what I love about it. You know, and I teach customer service, right? And so I really teach this stuff, Lori. And the things you did, I don't know if Bank of the West taught you this or you just do it naturally, but, you know, you used my name. You referenced a personal thing, this little itty-bitty thing that happened between us, and expressed your joy about it. You thank me at the end. You put a smiley face on it. I mean, in my training world, this is like you got an A++.
I mean, we are asked to use customers' names, but you know, just through my experience with customer service and through my experience as a customer, it's just more personal. And with your particular case, I always distinctly remember you coming to the drive, and your voice just always sounds so cheery, and that was before I knew you were on the radio. And, you know, we get some customers that just go through the everyday life of banking, and there's just a few that we really remember that really stand out to us. So we like to thank them for making our days a little brighter.
Yes, and is it, do most of the people that you deal with, whether it's at the drive-thru or at the counter, do they seem happy? Do they seem unhappy? Do they seem not one or the other? What's the average?
I don't want to answer that question. You know, with every customer service job, you have your upset customers, you have your happy customers. But I think it's safe to say that most customers don't let you know either way what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why the few that really reflect happiness really make our days a little bit better. So,
how do you deal then? Is it that encounter with that occasional happy customer that helps you get through those that are on the more grumpy side?
Absolutely. For me, a little spark is all it takes to get me through my day. So when somebody returns a smile to me, it just warms me up and puts me to go for the rest of the day.
Well, Lori, you're doing such a great job. Bank of the West is so fortunate to have you there, as are the customers who get to deal with your pretty smiling voice, if not your face, those of us who don't necessarily look up. But you really point out something that's so important. I train employees to be happy or try to find that happy place, but boy, what a world it would be if I could train customers to be happy. Wouldn't that be a funner, nicer place for us all to live in?
I think we should get started.
Listen, I'm going to start that company, and I think I'm going to make you the president, all right? You got it. Lori, thank you so much. Best of luck, and thank you for joining me this morning.
No problem. Thank you all.
You know, one of the funnest things is talking to people who are just genuinely seem happy, and hearing them explain about how they do what they do. And there is no process for those of us who are happy, and I certainly haven't been that way all my life, but for those that are, and trying to put into some sort of left-brain analytical terms your process. And it's just, you know, I just do, you know, they just do it. You know, they're just naturally happy people who naturally want to reach out and be good to people. Boy, those are the people. When you put those people on the front lines of retail, the front lines of any company, I don't care what it is, what they do, what the skill set is, you put genuinely happy, thoughtful, empathetic people on the front lines, and your company will take off no matter where. And as coworkers, working around people that are that way, oh, it's so much more fun, so much more enjoyable. Day goes faster, and then they give us permission, the rest of us who may be frowny brownies, and hey, man, I raise my hand to that at times throughout my working life. They give us permission to also be happy, that it's okay. And creating that positive peer pressure inside a workplace is unbelievable. It just spreads like a wildfire. And of course, the opposite is also true. And that's why people hire me. And you, and those of you who listen who have businesses, if you're interested in more about the Unsecret Shop or the training program, the biosphere, the things that I do in training and the people I work with, I'd love to speak with you. And we've had some clients come in through the portal of the Unsecret Shop, or go to www.theunsecretshopper.com. And it's all sort of spread out there. It tells you if you want to be a secret shopper, you can apply right there. It tells you the portals in to send in emails and so forth with information. We're hiring secret shoppers all the time. I would love to hear from you on that in that regard. And also, if you're a company maybe looking to have some secret shopping done or some training, I want to just know more about it, you can find it all out there at www.theunsecretshopper.com. Well, one man who has done his own share of training over the years and is now the principal at Ballard High School, John Ronca, will join us next right here. You're listening to the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show at 1350 KRNT.
Hey folks, this is Bobby Hanson. I always took pride in being able to get up and down the court fast. And when it comes to deep winter snow, nothing gets me up and down my driveway faster than my Toro Power Clear Snow Thrower from Clive Power Equipment. This baby is so easy to use. It's got a push-button electric start that fires it right up, and a patented power propel system, so there's no more pushing or lifting for you-know-who. I just grab the handles and away we go. Plus, this thing turns on a dime, and with its quick shoot control, the Power Clear lets me change shoot direction on the fly so I can get the driveway cleared and looking good before tip-off. Hey, take it from an old man who still thinks he's got a few moves left. The Toro Power Clear Snow Thrower has all the moves to help you beat old man winter. Check it out at Clive Power Equipment, and tell him Bobby sent you.
Also, check out the full line of Toro Power Max commercial-grade two-stage snow throwers, featuring the patented Power Max auger system that cuts down on clogging, interlocking levers for one-handed operation, and quick-stick shoot control for quickly changing snow direction. See the complete line of Toro snow throwers at Clive Power Equipment, where the power is. 7600 University Avenue in Clive, or 24/7 at clivepowerequipment.com.
This year, everyone needs a flu shot. At Dahl's Pharmacy, walk-ins are welcome. Flu shots are covered by Medicare and most insurance programs. This year's vaccine protects for 1 year against H1N1 and the seasonal variety. Ask your Dahl's pharmacist about cholesterol screening, INR level screening, a medicine review, plus pneumonia and shingles vaccines. Dahl's accepts all insurance programs. Since 1952, the neighborhood pharmacy you can trust. Dahl's. Expect more.
Are you looking for excellence in auto service? Hi, I'm Ron with Westside Auto Pros. Most of us have heard of AAA's Four Diamond Award. This coveted award is presented to the finest restaurants and hotels all across our country, a symbol of unsurpassed quality. But did you know that AAA also has an award for auto service facilities? It's called the Top Shop Award. And out of all the AAA-approved repair shops and dealerships in the Des Moines area, Westside Auto Pros is the only one to receive this award 7 years in a row. What does this mean to you? Excellent service for both you and your car. Honesty, integrity, and a job well done is at the heart of everything we do. Come experience the Westside Auto Pros difference. We are on 92nd Court just off of Swanson Boulevard in Clive. Call 225-9090. That's 225-9090. Or visit us online at Westside Auto Pros, where you can register to win free gas. Westside Auto Pros, proud to be a top shop.
Children well, 'cause their father's hell did slowly go by.
Welcome back to the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show on 1350 KRNT. It's a fine Saturday morning. We've been doing a little learning, listening to some people who have much to teach us in the way of joy, as well as their knowledge they've shared with us this morning. I appreciate you listening to the show and tuning in. If you want to find out more about anything that we've been yakking about this morning, you can go to www.theunsecretshopper.com, which is a blog post that I post at least a couple times a week, sometimes more than that. Just sort of, I think the last, what did I post? Oh, yeah, the Terry Branstead. Yeah, you maybe want to go read that that one. That one, I think, is pretty interesting. The day Terry Branstad fell for me. And sure, it is a play on words. And you'll think you'll find that. Have I related that on this show? Yeah, I won't get into it. I'd much rather talk to John Ronca. He is the principal at Ballard High School in Huxley, Iowa, my alma mater, where I went to school and where they're putting out a lot of great kids, young adults who are going off into the world and definitely learning some stuff as the teachers do such a great job there of teaching. John is one of the great directors there, one of the reasons why. Good morning, John.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Well, I'm fantastic, John. And first of all, I always wonder what teachers, who are absolutely my favorite people and administrators who come through all that, how they get started. How did you know at an early age when you were a kid that you wanted to go into the teaching profession?
I'll tell you what, John, it's quite interesting. I grew up in the state of Wisconsin, and my father was a middle school principal. My mother was a high school art teacher. And the three brothers, I had a younger brother and an older brother. I'm stuck right in the middle. And two of us became educators, and one went on to be a businessman, and he's living in Milwaukee right now. But I think, you know, I was around education my whole life, and it just became a natural thing for me. And I knew as a third or fourth grader that what I wanted to do was teach.
Now, John, did you, like, have a chalkboard when you were a kid? You used to put your stuffed animals and baseball cards around as if they were students, and you would show them, like, letters of the alphabet and talk to them like that. Did you do that kind of goop?
Not quite to that extent, but I do remember having conversations with neighbor kids, and I was kind of the guy that arranged people and told people what they needed to do and why they needed to do it. So, I had neighbor parents tell me that you seem like a natural leader as far as an educator goes. So maybe you should think about that, Johnny. And I guess what? That's the way it turned out. So,
you took their advice. You went with it.
I took their advice, and much to the chagrin of some others who thought, gosh, are you sure you want to get into this business?
Well, that was kind of my question, too. You know, teaching in many professions, particularly at the administrative level, seems like a rather thankless job at times. What was your first teaching gig and where?
My first teaching gig was Ballard, honestly. I went to Drake University and played football there for Chuck Shelton back in the day, and I was working at a shoe store on Merle Hay Road. It was called Acco Sports a long time ago, and I looked and saw an ad for Ballard Community Schools for a physical education and football coach and track coach, and put my stuff together, drove up here, shook hands with Steve Horning, the principal at that time. Right. I figured, you know, I want him to meet me in person.
Right.
But it turns out that Steve Horning was also a Drake football player, and when I shook his big old paw, I noticed the Drake ring on his finger and thought, hey, this might be a good way to have an in. Before I knew it, he was showing me around the district, and about 15 days later, I had the job.
So you came in, and then how long was it before you got the principal gig?
Well, I was football coach, track coach, and teacher here from 1988 till about 96. And at that time, I started my master's degree at University of Wisconsin-Superior. In the summer times, my folks have a wonderful summer home on a lake, and my younger brother and I went up there and decided to get our master's degree in administration while we were fishing on the weekends and working hard during the week. And came back, got that, and happened to have an opening as an assistant principal here, and the superintendent at the time, Craig Scott, hired me as the assistant principal, and 2 years doing that, and then came to be that Larry Schaefer, a longtime principal here, basketball coach. You remember Larry?
Yes.
He took early retirement, and I jumped into the principal role and haven't looked back.
And I don't know what the typical median time frame is for a school principal administrator, but that seems like you were kind of on a pretty fast track.
Yeah, you know, I was sitting in a classroom one time over at the elementary school. I had elementary physical education as well, and Gordy Mosier, who at the time was the West elementary principal, came in and sat down with me during my 20-minute break and said, you know something? I really think you need to consider administration. I really, really think you'd be outstanding at that role. You understand the whole concept of school, and we had a long conversation. That kind of was the spark. I really wasn't thinking that. I was thinking maybe down the road I'd be just a longtime coach and teacher. I absolutely loved that time with the kids. But after talking with Gordy over and over and over again, I he kind of guided me, and I took the ball and ran with it, so to speak. And I love what I do now as well. Every aspect of school, except I'm going to shy away from the superintendency. I've had some opportunities to be asked to join a consortium to be in the superintendent role. I just don't want to play that game.
It's not your bag of goodies.
I love being in the middle, Johnny. I love working with the staff and the students, and that will never change.
Well, you're middle kid. You were a negotiator as a kid.
There you go.
and now you continue to. I'm sure you do a lot of that as a principal.
You know, you try to find a middle ground where people are not necessarily getting their way, so to speak, but that there's some kind of resolve. I mean, we talk about relationships at Ballard all the time, and you know. Kids, staff, whoever walks these hallways, we always talk about relationship and how important it is to build that. You know, people talk about the test all the time, and we talk about relationships. The rest will come, and I think that's why we're successful. I mean, you remember being at Ballard High School as a Ballard graduate, and you know, that has never changed, Johnny. I think you'd be happy to know.
Well, it's John. You point that out too, and there was a vibe. And I've been in a lot of high schools since, and I realize, of course, it's all sense of where you're from. There's something special about that. But there was a vibe at Ballard that sometimes I don't necessarily feel or have felt at other schools, and I don't really know what it is. Can you put your finger on it?
You know, I really think it's the community itself. I think we have an extremely supportive cast of parents. I think that the students, as a general rule, are happy people. They know that they're supported. And I think that the teachers that we hire, we look for teachers that are great people, number one. You know, and if you're a graduate from a college these days, I think that colleges are doing better than they ever have as preparing young people to be quality educators. So we know they've got that in their package. But I want a great person first, and I think that's the key. You hire great people that are good to kids and respect kids. I think the rest just kind of falls in place.
Has it gotten easier or tougher to mediate all those pieces together into some sort of coherent form?
You know, I don't in any way, shape, or form remember a time when I'm sitting here thinking, gosh, this is just getting tougher to do. You know, I think it's more difficult to manage the teenage world with the Facebook and the Twitters and all those things and the way that teens communicate. But as far as when they're in the classroom and when teachers are working with kids in that capacity, I think it's the same. I don't think that's changed. The moment you start thinking it's changed and the moment we as an educational entity start thinking, you know what, this is over our heads, that's what's going to fall apart on you. You've got to walk the walk and talk the talk, and sometimes that's difficult, but you don't let the rest of the world see a sweat.
My guest this morning is John Ronca. He is the principal for 7th through 12th grade at Ballard High School. He joins us on 1350 KRNT. John, do you have a Facebook page?
I do have a Facebook page, ironically, and I'm on it maybe once a month. And it frustrates the techie friends that I have around the Midwest and all over the place, I guess, now at this point, because you know, they'll send me a message and it'll take me a month to respond to them. I'm not much into the Facebook, Johnny, but I did collapse and join the rest of the world.
Oh, well, it's good. Well, it's good to have you on board, John. We appreciate it. That's right. And it's all going. Listen, John, you're coming kicking and screaming whether you know it or not, because it's all going to Facebook. You know that. I mean,
I hear you there. I really do. You know, we're building a brand new high school. And that's going to be opening up here in April. I mean, it'll be completed in April. We'll join the actual facility in August of next year, Johnny. And I'll tell you what, that place is going to be chuck full of the most up-to-date technology that one could ask for. And so we're going to try to embrace that. We're going to try to find new ways to educate kids, and we're going to try to find ways to use their communication style and kind of meet them in the middle and have them teach us. I mean, we're going to have a state-of-the-art place, and we're not going to let it go to waste. We're going to use it.
John, one of the things that precipitated our conversation is that I wrote a post about the power of a handwritten note, and it was sort of an overview of a lot of elements. And there were two notes from two teachers that happened to be included, neither of which, I don't know if you know Greg Grove, personally, who has just been a mentor and a friend over the years. He's also going to be on this radio program this morning, but also my elementary teacher. And I was comparing the impact. I don't know if you had a chance to read the post, but the impact and the way those two particular notes were written that I wrote about, particularly from the elementary school teacher, which had a different sort of tone. Certainly, I wouldn't say necessarily a positive tone, some of that. How has teaching had to change? What was it? What was it more? Were we more open to being a little tougher with kids? I mean, I know it's a straw man. Of course, it seems like we were. But why has that changed? Why do we seem like it's the positive reinforcement we've just found is just so it seems so much more powerful or impactful? Or you tell me, you're the administrator.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about handwritten notes, and the young lady that got in a little bit of trouble the other day brought me a handwritten note. So it's interesting. The timing here is ironic, but you know what? And I will take the same time to write a handwritten note. I got the key to their lockers. I'll take a little Ballard stationery, and I'll open their locker, and I'll tape a note inside it, handwritten. And that means so much to kids, and it sounds like it sure means a lot to you.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know. I think in today's world in the school versus back when you and I both were in, you know, we're probably from the same, I'm a 1982 graduate.
Yep, 83 for me, yep.
Okay, so we're in the same boat here as far as genre of being in schools. It was much different when I grew up as far as teachers getting on kids, you know. And the positive reinforcements now, I think, are much more frequent now than they were then. And, you know, I'll never forget having a football coach who I thought hated me. But at the end of the day, after you graduate from high school, he pulls you aside and says, "You have no idea what you've meant to me in my program." Why couldn't you say that, coach, while I was there? you know, it's a tough love thing. And nowadays, I think people, including teachers, are so worried about the psyche of the child. Mm-hmm. that they really maybe go over the top in rewarding and complimenting when they should be setting higher bars for expectations and be a little bit more hardcore with them. You follow me?
Yes. Yes. In fact, in training I understand. Where is that balance? Where is the balance of making sure that a student or any person understands they're loved, it's not personal, and they're admired and nurturing, and that's all good, want to take care of you, but you got some learning to do, kid.
Yeah, and you know what, that balance absolutely comes from home. And I think that's why we have been successful here, because we do have parents that can play that tough love role. We have parents that set the high examples, and we have parents that back us when we take the hard line with a kid. You know, just the other day, I mean, I could tell you this, every single day when you talk to parents about some disciplinary actions we've taken or some whatever we've had to do with kids, the parents will say, "Thank you for calling. You know, we understand what you're doing. We support you." You know, what a great feeling. Wow. You don't have the parents knocking on your door ready to get a piece of you because you discipline their child or set the bar a little bit high for them. That's a good thing.
Well, John,
I know that. Yes, that's not true in a lot of places,
right?
You know?
No,
it really isn't.
No, it's not. And I think it takes a level of being willing to be vulnerable, having a sense of security in who you are, and then allowing yourself to be vulnerable to reach out to someone and tell them you're doing a great job. It's sort of, and I think that's one of the reasons why it doesn't happen maybe as frequently, particularly with handwritten notes or even verbal mm-hmm. asides, as maybe we wish it would in our society.
Yeah, and you're right. And I think a lot of it's based on, you know, there's a negative persona out there that we try to erase in the hallways. Whether it's a teacher just smiling and saying good morning, simple things that you have to do in order to keep the culture positive within a school. Like, we got 750 kids under one roof here, you know, and we've got a lunchroom that is absolutely jam-packed every single moment, and the kids don't get in fights. We maybe have one or two fights all year long. The kids get along. We ensure that. We nurture that by bringing the positiveness forward, and we expect the kids to be positive with each other as well. And that doesn't happen by accident.
John, do they still do chocolate milk on Fridays?
They do chocolate milk every day.
That's what I'm. Listen, you want to maintain you want to maintain a good attitude in school. John, you have went the right way with that. Chocolate milk every. I love it. Wow. Listen, Principal of the Year, you're getting my vote right now, all right?
Sounds good.
Whatever that's worth. John, yeah, you're doing outstanding work at my alma mater and a place that holds a special place in my heart and always will. John Ronca, thank you so much for the hard work that you and all the teachers do at Ballard and, of course, all teachers everywhere. Thank you for joining me this morning.
Johnny, I will pass that on, and I greatly appreciate you thinking about us.
Have a great weekend, everybody.